Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987, and also PWTorch.com and MMATorch.com, covering the world of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And it is great to have you here today. It is Thursday, December 22nd. 2016, the Dow Jones Industrial Average keeps trying to hit 20,000 and can't quite get there. It's at 19,900 and change, 907.44 right now at this moment. And we're going to try to put it over the top. How are we going to do that? We're going to give you a best of PW Torch Livecast episode today, and that'll allow you to do some stock trading while you listen to this best of show. Buy some stocks. Put them over 20,000 headed into the Christmas weekend. I don't even know where I'm going with this. I'm just proving we're live by saying what the stock market is at this very, very moment. I am live right now, but we are going to throw to a best of interview. And this is a good one. This is a Kevin Nash interview. It's one of my favorite live casts. This is from back in March 2012. Now, this was a two-hour interview. You can hear the whole 2 hours. As a VIP member, we're giving you the first hour here on the live cast. And in the entire two-hour interview, Kevin Nash talks about WrestleMania 28 and the Rock-John Cena dynamic. Fascinating insight from Kevin Nash on this. Also, this was part of our WrestleMania theme series back in 2012. We had Vince Russo on and a number of people who had been involved in WrestleManias over the course of several weeks leading into WrestleMania. And Kevin Nash talked about his appearance back at WrestleManias 10 and 11. His return 10 years ago, his shoot comment about Rock on live TV that led to backstage heat, an exclusive scoop on his recent feud with CM Punk, and why his match with Punk never took place, more backstage stories, his thoughts on John Cena, that then rising star Dolph Ziggler, why Rock brings on some of the heat he gets backstage, and much more. You can hear the first hour of this interview right now on the PW Torch Livecast.
VIP members will be getting a version of this show on the VIP podcast feed that will contain the entire two-hour interview. So if you want to hear this entire interview, go VIP and you can hear double Kevin Nash.
So without further delay, let's go ahead and get set up for the Kevin Nash interview. I think you are going to really, really enjoy this. If you are a newer listener and missed our early Kevin Nash interviews, he, for good reason, is among the very favorite guests of our listeners, and I love my chemistry when talking to him on the shows. He is just is a fantastic guest. I would have never guessed it back in the late 90s because he took some heat from us back then for some of the stuff politically going on. But he and I spent many hours on the phone just shooting the breeze and talking about stuff off air, and that's that chemistry and conversational tone carries over on air. And he is one of the people I enjoy talking to most in this world for about wrestling and other stuff. He's super smart and has great stories to tell and a really good memory for a lot of big things that he's been involved in. So anyway, I've plugged the heck out of this enough. Let's go to our obligatory commercial break here at Blog Talk Radio at pwtorchlivecast.com. And on the other side of this, it is very good must-listen Kevin Nash interview. Thanks, everybody. Hey, if you celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas. If you are just having a good weekend going to the movie theater, like a lot of my Jewish friends, then have a great weekend at the theater, catching some good movies. And thanks, everybody, for just a fantastic 2016 here at PW Torch Livecast. We are we have a rolling 30-day listenership number that I just looked up before going on the show and logging into our switchboard. Highest ever. We continue to grow by leaps and bounds. And I thank everybody so much for that. Follow me on Twitter at @DWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PW Torch and follow our sister brand at MMA Torch. Check out PWTorch.com and MMATorch.com every day. Here's some more details on PWTorch.com. Loaded with new features, by the way. If you haven't been to the website in a while, you got to check out our new features. Not only do we have all the TV shows covered with really good reviewers, but some new features. In fact, I'll be, as I listen to this Best of Kevin Nash interview, I'm going to be putting up Dominic D'Angelo's Rising Star and Fading Star of the Week. That's a new weekly feature. So many great new specialist features. Check it out at pwtorch.com. Here are more details.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
All right, we are back, and it is now time to play for you the Kevin Nash interview from March 2013. When you go VIP, you can just scroll through hundreds of our interviews from the past, and this is a sample of one of them. Enjoy, and thanks, everybody.
It is Friday, March 23rd, 2012, and that means it is Interview Friday, and I am pleased to introduce today's guest, Big Sexy Kevin Nash. Kevin, how you doing?
Good work.
Thanks for joining me today. Appreciate you taking time out.
No problem.
Cool. It is our WrestleMania theme month. We're trying to, every Friday here on the live cast, do talk about WrestleMania with our guests, and that's one of the things that I want to talk to you about is your WrestleMania experiences. And so in a moment we'll get to that. I want to give out the phone numbers for those who have questions for Kev. The number is 646-721-9828. That's 646-721-9828. And also you can email questions. We've got, looks like about 15 questions already emailed in. But if you've got a question you want me to ask Kevin Nash, please email that to pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. That's pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Kevin, am I right? Your first WrestleMania match was against Shawn Michaels?
Yeah, the first time I was involved was I came down with Shawn at the ladder match at the Garden in 10.
Yep.
And I interfered pretty early in the match because, you know, we had to get me out of there as soon as possible, storyline wise, in order the psychology of the match to work. So Hebner caught me, you know, pounding Scott, threw me out. That was the first one. And then the first time I headlined one was with me and Shawn, and then with me and Taker.
Yeah, and so both of those years, I mean, you had come from WCW with a few gimmicks, Vinny Vegas, Master Blaster. And, you know, WCW was a mess at that point. And you get to WWF, and within a really relatively short amount of time, here you are at Madison Square Garden, the 10th WrestleMania, and at least at the beginning of it, you're ringside eyewitness to one of the great matches of really all time on Super Shows. Talk a little bit about what that experience was like being at a WrestleMania compared to what you had experienced in WCW earlier in your career.
You know, I had watched, you know, several WrestleManias before that, and you know, it's, you know, the TV really does the atmosphere no justice. And I mean, there's big shows. Back then, we only had, you know, we had that my first year there was in '93, and that's when they added King of the Ring for the fifth pay per view. But at that point, the WWE, as it was called then, WWF, the WWE just had the four pay-per-views. So, you know, pay-per-views were pretty, you know, they were playoff games, but of course, you know, WrestleMania was a Super Bowl. And it was, you know, number one, we were in the Garden, which is always special.
Yeah.
And, you know, and for me, it was just, you know, to be a part of it, like to to have came out in St. Petersburg with that lime green dunce cap on, and then, you know, within about a year and a half later, I'm ringside with Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, and like you said, probably one of the greatest matches ever in WrestleMania history or any big show history. And even though I was only a part of for a short time, you know, I still was involved in, you know, listening to them put it together and then going back and sitting at the monitor and watching it, you know, transpire. So it was great, you know.
One related note, just in terms of current events, because John Cena just did an interview with Sports Illustrated this week and talked about how they sold out the Garden on Sunday. Triple H was involved in a tag match in the main event.
He did Taker's finish.
Oh, right, yep.
Yeah.
And Cena had said he looked around that locker room and he felt that only maybe two or three other guys in that locker room understood the significance of headlining at the Garden, or I should say being part of a show that sold out the Garden, and that disappointed him quite, you know, that was really disappointing to him. And I thought that was good because I know in the 90s the Garden was the measuring stick for how you guys were doing as a company. I don't go there as often now, but.
We used to go once a month.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember when the first Garden show that I went into, and I was just Sean's bodyguard, I think the house was $109,000 or $112,000. And I know that the last Garden show that I did before we went to WCW with Sean and I were in a cage in the main event, the last match, that it was sold out. And it was at that point, it was over $300,000 at the gate. It was the largest gate they ever had that wasn't a pay-per-view.
Yeah,
you know. So I mean, it was like, you know, and we that crew of guys, you know, I'll always feel a special bond to, because I really felt that we, you know, Hulk left, Randy left, and we kind of, you know, dug that thing out and got it up and running, and it was great. But yeah, the Garden was always such a significance. You know, and that's like the whole business is like that now. Like it is sad that people don't realize, you know, the history and what it was like, because it's not like that anymore. You know, it's not the guy's fault.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
what would you do? I mean, in terms of. To me, it seems like it reflects poorly on management that wrestlers have the attitude that John Cena said they have. And really, Rock tweeted about that about a month ago, saying, you know, that there's so many guys who don't understand the business end of this business. And I think there he was kind of referring to, you know, rumblings that people were complaining about his presence for WrestleMania 28 this year and at Survivor Series last fall. But nevertheless, I think it reflects somewhat on management that wrestlers feel that their pay – and their push is so disconnected from signs of success, such as attendance, that they just kind of go through the motions and do what they're told. Do you think that there is that disconnect between being able to make a difference and the gates that and the attendance and wrestlers not really taking pride in it because they don't feel they're really valued or contributing in a way that directly changes things?
You know, I look at it from and because one of my, you know, one of my closest and dearest friends, you know, Paul is directly involved with management.
Yeah.
And I don't blame management in any form or fashion. It seems to me that when I was in that locker room, there's a lot of guys are sitting around there and they're waiting to be anointed.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not a shark tank like it used to be.
Yeah.
It used to be like, you know, your ankle's bad. You're not going to work tonight. Are you kidding me? Like it wasn't even if you were hurt, you went. And that may be one of the reasons why so many guys got, you know, involved with gimmicks and stuff. But I mean, nobody gave up their spot. Nobody. I mean, if you were opening match, man, you held that spot like it was, you know, life or death.
Yeah.
And it was just a different era, you know. You can't recreate something when you're on the road for 24 days, and you're in a car for 5 days with with four or five guys for 25 days, and it's like you're spending more time with these guys than anybody else in your world. This is your world. You come home, you spend 3 days with your wife, and she's basically, it's just like the first day you come home, there's this awkwardness. The second day you realize, oh, I know why I married her. I love her. She's fun. And the third day you're packing and getting ready to go.
Yeah.
And then in the meantime, you're on your phone with your buddies laughing about, stuff you did on the road.
Yeah.
And she's looking at you like, really? You're on the phone with Sean now? So it was just a different time. It was a different group of guys. There weren't training centers, and you didn't get paid to train.
Yep.
The old school was you paid $1,500, you went to somebody's Quonset hut, they made you do Hindu squats till you puked and you never came back.
Right.
To get into the brotherhood was, you had to give a kidney. Now they've got, they got guys that, somebody told me that this guy's been in developmental for 5 years. I don't know a guy that's made in this business that didn't make it three.
Yeah.
If you ain't semi over in three with any kind of a push, you're not going to make it.
Yeah. Well, let me go back to the WrestleMania 11 match with Shawn Michaels and talk about the pressure you felt going into that match, the circumstances of it. When you look back at that day, what memories stand out? I mean, I know it wasn't a stadium show. It was in Hartford. It was before WWE necessarily went to a lot of big events, but it still had to have a different vibe to it.
Well, number one, it was Shawn, So, I knew that he was going to try to steal the show at anyone's expense. So, and we had a good, I thought we had a good match.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But to me, they did it was like one of those deals where they did such a build up with the Bam Bam and the LT thing.
Yeah.
That it kind of, I just think it was special, but at the same time, and on top of that, there's so much going on during WrestleMania those 3 or 4 days before, and now the access is even crazier.
Yeah.
That it's almost, I've said this in another interview, that it's almost like WrestleMania, like when you go back in the back and you unlace your booth, it's almost like, wow, that's over.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's like when you get a movie part and you're so excited and like, 4 months later when they say, and you're a wrap, and you're like, God, I'm glad that's over. Even though you enjoyed it and it was special, it's just still, there's so much raw emotion and so much, because what we do is really, probably 70% mental. And, once you get out there, and at that point, too, Sean and I had touched, we went like 40 minutes in Berlin, like maybe 2 or 3 weeks before that.
Oh, wow.
And had a really good match. So we had, you touched so many times with the guy before you went out there and had that match. I remember going out to SummerSlam with Scott Hall, and we were doing so much personal appearance work and everything else. And like, we just basically did our B match. When we had Walter Payton with us, because we were both exhausted, and we're just like, you want to take that? No, let's take that now. Because it was one of those deals where, just the exhaustion of being on the road for so long at set end, it was just like, it's got to get through this thing, man.
Yeah.
So.
Very good. If you're just joining us, Kevin Nash is today's guest on Interview Friday on the PW Torch livecast. Our phone number here is 646-721-9828. Just a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at PW Torch and also at The Wade Keller. And if you haven't yet, if you have an iPhone and you haven't yet, please download the PW Torch Livecast app. It is free, and it means that on your phone, you're one click away from being able to listen to any of our livecasts, which are on Monday through Friday, around 30 minutes after the show ends. The recording pops up on the app. Just do a search for PW Torch on your iPhone or iPad. And you can download that to your phone and make listening to the livecast even easier. Kevin, looks like we have about 15 people on hold. So should we dive into phone calls?
Sure.
All right, cool. Let's begin with area code 423. Thanks for calling. Please state your name and where you're from.
Hey, guys. It's Ian from Tennessee.
Hey, Ian. Good to hear from you. What have you got for Kev today?
Well, I have a bit of a comment that I want to wrap around into a question. Kevin, back around 94 and 95, I was a really big fan of you and Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. And really, you guys, to me, were at that age what I think John Cena is to, you know, a lot of kids that age now. And in a lot of ways, WWE was more PG than it is now. And you guys didn't go out there and cut down your opponents and become overly cartoonish. Heel or face, either way, I was always loyal. So my question is, whenever I hear John Cena use that type of excuse when he tries to defend his character by saying that it's like that being PG, do you think that's a valid argument?
Kev?
I think one thing with John's characters, and I've said it before in other interviews, is John has, you know, it's really hard to go out there and be that white meat baby face that he has to, you know, that he portrays, and that, you know, and he is in real life. You know, this is a guy that basically people don't realize is probably the last guy that is on the road 300 plus days a year, because he does so much Make-A-Wish, and he's the face of the company. And when you're John Cena and you pull that, you know, and you're pulling that wagon day in and day out, and you're staying true, and you're going to buildings and buildings are chanting Cena sucks, the easiest thing to do is just throw up a middle finger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the easiest thing to do, and he hasn't done that. He hasn't turned, you know. So I mean, it's just like he's of all the people, I mean, and the thing is, you know, so I remember we were up in, it was a Canadian, and I think it was Edmonton we ran, and that building chanted Cena sucks so loud, and I was in a SUV leaving, and we got caught in traffic going back to the hotel. I was just sitting in the back seat, and I looked, and I saw every kid that left that building had a Cena shirt on, a Cena hat on, and Cena wristbands, which is about $80 worth of merch. And I said to myself, I said, yeah, John Cena's laughing all the way to the bank.
Oh, no, especially with the people who buy the Cena Sucks t-shirts. You know,
exactly.
I mean, obviously he's getting a cut of that. So
absolutely.
I love the irony of that.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant.
I've been asked this recently, and I'm curious what you think. How do you think John Cena, knowing what you know and seeing what you've seen of his career the last 8 years, how do you think he would have fit in the late 90s, whether it was in the WWF or Shawn Michaels, and, you know, kind of the beginning of the Attitude Era, or the precursor to it, and also in WCW. If he wasn't having to follow the PG rules, do you think that his character would have ended up being different in the late 90s?
Yeah, I think he would have, because, I mean, he's got a wicked side to him. I mean, I've hung out with him, and, you know, the thing is, though, he's like an old school guy. Like, you know, John will shut the bar down with you and be the first guy in the next day with six plates on each side squatting.
Yeah.
You know, he's still, like, when I met him and got to hang around, I really didn't, our paths had never crossed into this last short run that I had up there, and it was like, I just kind of sat back and took a deep breath, and I said, you know, like, wow, there's still, because, you know, Taker and Triple H are saying that once we're gone, it's over, and I'm like, nah, there's still one of you. There's still one more left, Cena. You know, he's still one of the boys.
When you look at him now, and you knowing what you know about the burden, I don't know if it's a burden, but the weight on the shoulders of a champion, especially a babyface champion, what are the pros and cons that John Cena is considering when people pressure him or the idea comes up to turn heel? Because you talk about that, the crowd is chanting Cena sucks. Clearly, if Cena turned heel and they had the right babyface opponents, it could spark business. But you lose the carloads of families buying, you know, $200 worth of merchandise, and his salary could, or I don't know if salary is a word, but the money he takes in each year could be cut in half if he lost face merch. So it's a big risk, isn't it?
It's a huge risk, and yeah. And you know, and what people that are smart to what they're doing, and John's one of them. This is a business. And, you know, John's got a lot of miles on his body. John's beat up like everybody else is. You know, exterior-wise, he doesn't look it because, you know, he's kept himself in great shape. He doesn't miss workouts. He keeps his diet tight. And on top of that, he's just a genetic freak. I was sitting next to him on a private plane coming back to Florida. The guy's knee joint's 5 times the size of mine. I mean, the guy's like, he's built like a tank. He's a big, giant, raw-boned. He's a freak,
yeah.
You know? He's a freak. He's a big, thick-boned, you know, he's a freak. The guy is a freak, and he's super strong, and he's durable, and he, you know, I tell you one thing, he always looks the same, you know?
Yeah.
He never gets bigger, never gets smaller.
Yeah.
He's that freak.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, he would make a good heel. I think there's no doubt he'd make a good heel, but the price,
I don't think you'll never get a better chance to do it than against Rocket in Miami. I mean, the stage couldn't be more set for him to do something absolutely, you know, diabolical. But then it, you know, you take that away and maybe. One guy wins one guy wins SummerSlam, you go into next WrestleMania with a rubber match. Like, is there more money? Get 3 matches out of Rock and Cena than one in Turn and John. And then I would have to say business-wise, of course, there's always more to get in 3.
Yeah.
And you're still, you know, you're definitely, it ain't like Dwayne ain't selling those, you know, he might change one thing on his T-shirt every appearance, but it's, you know... 324,356 on this week's T-shirt. You know,
yeah.
They ain't like Dwayne ain't get, you know, a new T-shirt every Monday. So it's, you know, that's the business that the guys are in, and the smart guys know how to manipulate it, especially when you've got the stroke to be able to do so. I tip my hat to them.
Let's go to our second call here, area code 601. Thanks for holding. Please state your name and where you're from.
Sergeant Kevin Robinson, Jackson, Mississippi.
Hey, Kevin, what have you got for Kevin?
Well, I'm a fellow Kevin. It's an honor to meet a future Hall of Fame legend. I wish I could have seen you live, and I sure wish I could hang out with you at that little party spot you got for WrestleMania. But over your career, you've been doing good things, and I'm going to ask you the same question. What you think the outcome for some of the WrestleMania matches going to be?
Well, I don't know what it is. I'm not, you know, and I don't want to know. But I mean, I have no idea which way they're going to go on that. I mean, you know, you're in Miami, which is Rock's hometown, but then again, Rock, even though he's been, you know, functionally a part of the show for the better part of a couple of months here or there, he ain't on that bus going from town to town. So it's, you know, to me, it's like, you know, for management's case, you have to say, wow, you know, do you beat the guy that's carrying the company? Or, you know, I mean, I really don't know. I mean, I put it this way here. This is one of the few WrestleManias that, and I'm going to go to WrestleMania, but it's so hard for me to watch because you have to end up watching it because we're up in a box. We have to end up watching it on the big screen. I'm going to see if I can find a monitor somewhere and sit and watch it because, like, when I watched Taker and Triple H's match last year, I found myself looking at the ring, which was because we're so high up, was small, and then looking at the and kind of losing the feel for the story they were telling, that when I went home and watched it on my own system, it was like I got so much more out of the story that they told. So that's the whole thing for me, is just like I'm looking so forward to it. I just hope I get to watch it in the right environment where I could really watch it and appreciate what they're doing.
When you wrestled Shawn Michaels at 11, how far in advance was the finish discussed?
There wasn't a chance of me getting beat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, because they were gonna push me for a while. So I knew that, and it was important because I don't think any babyface had made it out of Mania in a long time with a strap. And I think that was one of the things that they were doing. But I also knew that it was going to Shawn. You know, that eventually that bout was going to go to Shawn, and I think that he, you know, definitely, you know, stated a case that night, you know, for him to be the man. You know, he was fantastic. You know, and you know, I had a great match because I had, you know, I was dancing with a star.
Yeah.
So, but I knew that I was going to get out alive. But then again, if you go to the WrestleMania where Scott Hall wrestled Stone Cold, the finish of that match was supposed to be, we were going to beat Stone Cold, and then Rock was going to go over on Hogan, and then we were going to come down and put the boots to Rock, and the NWO was going to stand over Rock at the end of the night, and we were going to go forward, and within 24 hours, Austin was stunning me and Scott, and Hogan was putting on the red and white.
Mm.
I mean, the red and yellow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that changed in 24 hours.
Yeah.
You know, which, you know, it was like, whoa. So it's not like it can't be done and hasn't been done, because I've been a witness of that. I mean, you just kind of walk in and go, wow, well, that's kind of different than where we were going. You're pretty much killing us off.
And what is your hunch on how Pinky Rock is going to be about what the finish is of the match a week from Sunday? Is he going to be worried about doing the job in Miami? Do you think that's something that was worked out ahead of time that he would have been very particular about?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, I talked to a guy from The Sun, you know, and he was saying how there was inklings in the back, the uprising in the back where guys were saying things. And I said, you know, I said, if I was on the WrestleMania card and I knew that Dwayne was going to be on it, I know, number one, I'm going to get a bigger payday.
Yeah.
It's going to sell more pay. It's going to, you know, the guy opens number one at the box office consistently. I mean, not only do you have a crossover star that you're bringing into WrestleMania, but he also just happens to be one of the boys that can go.
Yeah.
You know, this is like the first time that your special guest is, you know, a guy that can go, that's, you know, is a Hall of Famer. So I don't see a downside to it. Like I told the guy from The Sun, I said, you know, WWE needs Dwayne a lot more than Dwayne needs WWE.
Well, and you were around for the Survivor Series last year. Did you sense that there was resentment even then for Rock being on a Survivor Series card, or was there an appreciation that Rock was actually wrestling on something other than a WrestleMania?
I think that Rock, because Dwayne came in and Dwayne, you know, like, people don't understand, like, when you walk away from the business, and for him it was 7 years, when you walk away, and for me, I'd been gone from the WWE since 2003, I think. So when you come back, it's like you don't know anyone.
Yeah.
It's not that you're being aloof. It's not that you just don't know. You don't know anyone. And it's not out of disrespect that you don't go around and shake everybody's hands. It's just there's that nervous energy of you know, for me, even the ladder match that I had with Triple H, that was the first match I had in almost 2 years. You know, I mean, I had a couple of six-man tags, you know, on the road with the guys and stuff like that, and some tag matches in Japan, but I hadn't had a singles match in over 2 years.
Yeah.
So, it's not like it's not like, you know, I got my lines, I'm going to go out here and hit my spot, and it acting is a lot different than wrestling.
When you come back, do you go around and try to get to know the guys? I mean, or do you kind of feel like they should come up to you because you're the veteran?
No, I think it's a mutual thing. I think it's a situation where, you know, and it's one of those things again, you know, where I'm a young guy, I'm in the locker room, and all of a sudden here comes this 52-year-old guy walking back in, and he's kind of in the middle of the mix, and you're going, oh, my God.
Who's this 52-year-old you speak of, Kevin?
Me.
What? No, all right, go ahead.
So you understand that there's going to be animosity.
Yeah.
You know, that the guy's like, why? And then on top of that, it's just like, oh, Triple H is bringing his boy back.
Right.
You know, and it's one of those things, and you say to yourself, oh, geez.
Yeah.
So you don't want to come out and come in there glad-handing, you know, like you're trying to, oh, no, I'm still one of the boys.
Or you're politicking.
And that was the one thing. It's just like people don't realize that I've changed. And you can say it a million times, but it's just like, no, it's still there somewhere. Yeah, you know, he's still got some angle that he wants to do. He'll pull something on me.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, geez, guys, really? So.
Well,
you know,
let me seize on that. When you say you've changed, we've got a, you know, relatively large audience here on the live cast. What do you mean? Because a lot of people look back at, they've read the books or the newsletters or the website accounts, and they think, wow, Kevin Nash is one of the, you know, fabulous five who killed WCW, or the number one guy who did, or whatever. What do you mean you've changed, and what are you atoning for, I guess?
I mean, I don't think that I've done anything. Like, I came back and what I did with CM Punk was I never wavered from, they wanted me to be a heel. I didn't go out and even raise a fist.
Uh-huh.
I did absolutely nothing to conjure or make it harder for Phil to be perceived as the babyface and me to be perceived as a nemesis. I did what I was told to do. I did my job. I did try to get cutesy
right
throughout the Waffle House thing, because it got to the point where the writers were just absolutely burying me.
Uh-huh.
They were giving me nothing. He had four paragraphs, and my thing was, yeah.
And you winged that on air? He didn't know that was coming?
Yeah, the Waffle House thing was just, I just threw a bomb at him because,
yeah,
you know, he did. There wasn't click, click, click on his page.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like, you know, hey, you know, it's not like I'm unarmed over here.
Right.
It's like I'm just trying to play by the rules. Everybody told me play nice, so I'm playing nice.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and like I couldn't walk up to somebody and bitch smack me in the side of the head on live TV and then see where we go from there. Besides being fired.
Yeah. Well, but you say that you've changed, and I assume you mean from when you were in WCW in the NWO in the late 90s.
Absolutely, because I'm done lifting my leg and marking my territory.
Yeah.
I do this because I still enjoy it. I absolutely, like going out in London in the O, and it was like close to sold out, if not sold out. I'd never worked that building, and just to walk out there and absorb that like I did the Rumble, like I did, because as you go through your career, you think it's never going to end. But when you see the end of the tunnel and you realize, like, you know, I'm going to take this in. Like, we went to Japan. I just sat and looked out the window, you know, on the ride from Tokyo out to Yokohama. It was just like I just sat there and looked at that megapolis that, just the never-ending, you know, megapolis, and just took it in, because the next time that I probably go look at that, it's going to be on my dime.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, things change and people change. And change. You know, I'm sorry, you know, but when you get older, you do change. And
yep.
you're not, you know, things, your perspective, you know, like I said, you know, the other day on that interview with a guy from this, I said, you know, people keep saying, you know, we want you back, but people don't understand when you work for the WWE, even if you're just doing Raws, you fly out Sunday, you work Monday, and you fly home Tuesday. And I'm not an early morning person, so I'm on a 1 o'clock flight on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I'm flying in and out of Orlando, which is a 90-minute drive. So that's 3 days. Put a pay-per-view in that. Just to do TVs and be in a pay-per-view is a 13-day month.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's a lot. That's a lot on a 52-year-old body that's had two broken necks and 30 operations.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's just like I do love it. And I came back and I did the European, I did half the European loop, which was like 7 days. I didn't complain. I worked hard every night. I did, you know, the Japan trip. I didn't complain. I worked hard every night. I did whatever I was asked to do. And I think that some of the guys, you know, I think even the ladder match, you know, did I want to take that bump off that ladder with knowing that, you know, I've got some bulged discs in my neck and if I do land wrong, I could get hurt? No, but did I have to do it for the business? I think I did because somebody had to fall off that ladder.
Yeah.
And it had to be me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you want to paint Kevin Nash in the corner and you want to book him in something that he's destined to fail, I think ladder match would be at the top of the list.
Yeah.
And
go ahead. No, sorry.
Go ahead. It wasn't my idea.
When you are talking about the schedule, did you anticipate that you might be part of WrestleMania 28 this year in Miami?
I couldn't see how because I couldn't see knowing that Glenn was coming back. It's like I couldn't see where I deserved a spot over guys that like Glenn's never left.
Yeah.
You know, Glenn, you know, Kane.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I'm sorry. That's Kane's right. Never left.
Yep.
So, of course, he deserves a spot over me. Big Show deserves a spot over me. Mark Henry deserves a spot over me. Barrett, all those guys that have been there for 3-4 years in their developmental and on their program, they all deserve a spot before I do because they've been there and they put their time in, and this is what, I mean, make a good WrestleMania payday can make or break your year.
Yeah.
I mean, it can knock a hell of a chunk of your downside down and start making you extra money. So did I want to? Absolutely. Am I still trying to lobby my way in? Of course I am. I would love to be Shawn Michaels' bodyguard once again because this thing may turn sour and he may need protection.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would love to be involved.
Yeah.
I don't even need a payday. I just want to be out there. I just want to be out there watching.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I just want to walk down the ramp one more time and feel that feeling.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even have to pay me. You know, I work scale. What's it, 1600 a day? I work scale.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just, and that's the whole thing. People don't get that.
Yeah.
People and I can sit here and say it all day long, but people don't get it.
Yeah. All right, very good. Let's go back to the phone lines and go to area code 219 next on deck, 315-706 and 812. 219, thanks for holding. Please state your name and where you're from.
Yeah, hi, this is Mike from the Chicago area.
Hey, Mike, thanks for calling. What do we got for Kevin?
Hi, Kevin. I'm a big fan of yours. A few months back, you were having some issues with the Ultimate Warrior where you exchanged some insults on Twitter. He did a video, and then you ended up calling him Dr. Evil. Did you guys butt heads at all in the past, or did this just come up recently? How'd you get along when you were working together?
I never had a problem with him. I mean, I never really talked to him. You know, I mean, it was just one of those deals where he just threw something out. But, see, the funniest thing is like, people, I guess, like, people's, like, perception in their mind of what Twitter is and what mine is. Like, mine's like it's like a PlayStation game. Like if I feel like playing, it's like, what do I want to play tonight? Do I want to play Call of Duty? No, I'll play Twitter. And I just like threw a little thing out at him, and I know from watching his response, he spent the better part of a day and a half with the edits and everything else, and I sat home and just laughed. I know he's not going to fight me. I just know that in my mind, I sat there and I said, I watched it back, and I sat there and horse laughed. And I said, I just took a day and a half out of somebody's life and completely mind screwed them over just this stupid Twitter thing. And I just thought it was hilarious. Everybody else thought it was like, oh my God, you guys hate him. I don't hate him. I don't give it. I just thought it was funny to be able just to pull somebody's. It's still nice to know that you can pull people's strings.
Yeah. Well, and for people who don't know, Kevin, what did you say initially on Twitter that set everything off?
He was the one. He said that. I guess somebody asked him and he just said that I'm not going to hang around like Kevin Nash and pull the young guys down and, you know, suck blood out of the business, blah, 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 you know. And I was just like, basically, he used some kind of profanity, called me yeah. something. Like a Scheiße head in German. But, and it was just like, all right, well, I'll fire back. And then I sat and I thought about it. I said, what can I do? I mean, firing back's one thing, but like, let me paint him in a corner. So I just said, I'll fight Spider again. And he came back and said, I wouldn't do it for a million. Okay, I'm 52 years old. There's not a human being on this planet I wouldn't fight for $1 million. All I've got to do is tap out or get knocked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. $1 million? You're not gonna fight a 52-year guy for $1 million? No, you had to. He wants 10. What does he think these guys get paid to fight UFC?
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden you realize it's just like, man, this isn't even fair because A, he's not even on this planet.
I think Frank Mir is somebody I wouldn't fight for $1 million because I think he would snap my arm like he did Nogueira. I mean, I love money, but I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to go through that.
Come on, that's going to heal?
Yeah, oh, man, though. I don't think I would heal psychologically from looking at my arm broken, dangling like that. I probably would.
I've looked down a couple of times and seen body parts hanging different ways.
And you're fine.
Yeah.
All right.
And I sure as hell didn't get $1 million for it.
Yeah. All right, very cool. Well, enough on Warrior, because I want to keep rolling through calls here, and he's
cool.
He's a strange bird. All right.
Yeah, I love the death, though.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with him. You know what? I saw him as a dingo warrior when I was a mark, and he was jacked to the gills, shaking the ropes, and he was one of the most impressive human beings I've ever seen in my life. And I trained in his gym when we both lived in Phoenix, and I have no animosity towards the dude. I just feel sorry for him.
I'd like to say Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net is on record. He says $1 million for a broken arm, done. So anyway, all right, let's go to 315 next. 315, thanks for holding. Please state your name and where you're from.
This is Ryan from New York.
Hey, Ryan. What have you got for Kevin Nash?
Yeah, I just had a couple things I wanted to hear your comments on. I was wondering if you could share any memories or thoughts on the late Randy Savage. And what your thoughts were on CM Punk in this past year and the possibilities of Alex Shelley or Samoa Joe going to WWE.
Good questions. Thanks for the topics, Ryan. Kevin, first of all, Randy Savage memories or stories?
I mean, God, one of a kind, one of the best humans I've ever met. Feel honored to be able to call him a friend. I mean, we spent so much time together, you know,
yeah.
during the run when WCW, you know, and he was our, you know, when everybody else left and Randy was doing color with Vince when Raw kicked off and everything else, he was the captain, you know, he was the mentor, he was the guy that was left from the era, he was the tree of wisdom that we all went and talked to and asked questions to, and, you know. One thing he told me was, He said, these two things Randy told me, never take yourself out of the game and always reach for the brass ring.
How about CM Punk? You talked about kind of improvising a little bit on that promo. Was Punk upset at all, or anyone upset with Waffle House line?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, no one expressed like, oh, you shouldn't be doing that.
No, I think, if anything else, I think Phil probably enjoyed it. And, I mean, there were so many times that Phil and I. Yeah, you know, we didn't know each other from Adam, and yeah. we're getting like, it's we're first segment and it's 8:43 and we don't have our verbiage yet, because they're changing things and doing things, and it's just like, you know, there were times they came out and said, well, what happened to his interview skills? Number one, I used to be able to go out there and just say whatever I wanted to say.
Right.
I never had to read off a piece of paper before. Let alone get that piece of paper that had six paragraphs 8 minutes before they started shooting fireworks and my big ass walked down a ramp. You know, just like, this is a little bit, you know.
I don't think that's ever been your skill set, period, is to go out there and speak through someone else's voice or, you know, someone else's words.
Never, and especially if it's live and I can bury you.
Yeah, right.
Jeez.
Yeah.
But the thing is, too, that bury a guy and then turn it around where you open yourself back up to let him get back on top, just like you would a match.
Yeah.
You know, like still accomplish what you're supposed to do, but, you know, at least have that spontaneity. But, you know what? I actually had one of the young writers from the WWE look at me and goes, I was sitting and watching some of your old Diesel promos. Like, this guy didn't even know who I was.
Wow.
I'm like, and you're writing my promos and you're having to watch Diesel promos to get an idea of who and what and where. And then, you know, the what thing that, God bless all that Steve Austin brought to the business. He brought what. That made in the long run, subtract.
I agree.
And they're telling me that, you know how I talk the same way Scott Hall talks. We're very monotone, and our delivery is very, you can watch all the time through it. And they're telling me, speak faster, do this. I'm like, I mean, because we're PG, and I can't say, okay, we're going to do a thing called operating conditioning. I'm going to say something. You're going to say what? What? Okay, I'm going to say something. Say what? I'll say what? Say okay. If you say what, you're picturing me naked. What? I mean, I would have had fun with it.
Yeah.
But I can't do that because we're PG-13, and I can't go off script, so I just have to go out there and ramble through my lines.
I thought Brother Ray, Bubba, on last Thursday's Impact, it was a pay-per-view on Sunday, live. And he comes out, and the crowd starts chanting, "We want D-Von." And I'm just sitting here shaking my head. You know, it's like, he hasn't been involved in a program with D-Von in, you know, months and months and months. He's trying to establish that he's not a tag team wrestler just as being a singles guy. He's doing some of the best promos in this industry in years. I've become such a fan of his work, his psychology and everything. So I'm interested, because to me it's almost equivalent of a what chant, when people bombard him with a nostalgia chant. It's just kind of annoying. That's not what he's there to do. You're here, you're at the show, he's feuding with James Storm. Get with it or shut up. You know, that's kind of what I'm thinking watching it. So what does he do? He stood there, and he didn't sell it, but he didn't say a word. He just sat there and waited for it to die down. He was like, get it out of your system. I'm not going to sell it. I'm not going to be upset, but I'm not going to play into it. And it was, like, magical. It was like he did nothing, but about, I'd say, 12 to 17 seconds later, it faded away, and then he just picked up right where he left off. And it worked.
Yeah, they would have had a stroke if you were to stand up and give 17 seconds of silence on Raw.
It's beneficial when you're doing it in front of, you know, 3,000 to 6,000 people on pay-per-view as opposed to, you know, live on Raw with that kind of pressure. But I don't know if it would work with a what chant, because the what is in response to what you're saying. You know, it's like you talk, they say what? You talk,
see,
they say
I've
what?
I've always thought that if you just continually repeated what you said the first time.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
I mean, I've had enough of CM Punk. What? I said I've had enough of CM Punk. What? I said I've had enough of CM Punk. I don't
know
what
that language. Vince backstage, if you just did that for like, you know.
Oh. I honestly think that the hook would just come out and hit the TV. They would go to commercial break.
But then if they came back from commercial and you were still doing it, it would be classic.
Don't think it didn't cross my mind, my friend.
Yeah, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do with that. But it's sort of like doing the, you know, like Jason Paul and I have talked about this when we were Viking season ticket holders during the whole Randy Moss, Chris Carter, Randall Cunningham 15-1 season. All the fans would do the wave when your team was on when the Vikings were on offense. And it's like you're supposed to be quiet when your team's on offense. You know.
Yeah.
So, and people would do the wave, and we didn't smack them, but we wanted to, and we would get in their face and say, don't, you know, like, we'd literally chew them out. And so it's like, that's what I feel like fans should do to fans that are chanting what? It's like, shout them down. I'm not going to encourage doing anything that'll get you kicked out of the building, but everybody out there, make it clear that's not cool. It's not helping the show. It's drawing undue attention to yourself. It's tripping up what you're there to see. It's just like,
it's equivalent of talking in a movie.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah.
Like you'd be having me talking in a movie, it's like, really? Go home?
Yeah.
Watch on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were doing it to Undertaker 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago at Target Center.
I texted to Triple H immediately. I said, I can't believe they would disrespect Mark and actually what him.
Yep. Yep. They created the monster. Well, anyway, we got off track a little bit, but it was good. But Alex Shelley and Samoa Joe going to WWE, do you think that they would fit in there? I know you were a big proponent of Samoa Joe during your first TNA stint.
I think they both are. I think they're both very unique. They both are great hands. I think that they both got good mic skills. You know, those are guys. I mean, Alex Shelley to me is he's just one of those guys that, there's very few people that have that really dry, and he has such a, he's so poignant but so dry.
Yep.
And it's just, he's really talented. He can sing, he can play instruments, and he's got that demo.
I agree.
You know, he's got that Jeff Hardy thing.
He's got the thing that TNA management and creative don't get.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of them, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just, I think a lot of people don't get it because, you know, there's not a lot of people staying up watching Carson Daly just to see really some underground band from Chicago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
I'm still that idiot.
What about Samoa Joe works, and what do you think works against him? I mean, what is it that would take somebody like Joe, who doesn't look the part according to most people's standards, what is it about him that made you push for him to even be hired by TNA in the first place? I know you were one of the proponents who saw his Ring of Honor work and thought, get this guy in here. He's different. What did you and do you like about him?
One of the things I do like about him is that he moves very, very well for a guy his size. He's very explosive. Everything he does looks solid. 90% of the stuff he does doesn't hurt you. That dive through is pretty rough.
Yeah.
I learned how to take that. I learned how to Olay that one after I took it one time. but, you know, and I just think, like, if he had on, like, a really cool pair of mixed martial arts fighting shorts and wore the mixed martial arts gloves, and just kind of, that was, you know, because he's not a body guy, you know, but he does know all those submissions and all that. He's a good striker, and it's just like, that's one of those guys that can give you that little bit of crossover flavor that I think you need on your card.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Let's move to our next call. 706-812 and 608 are on deck. 706, please state your name and where you're from.
Hey, guys. This is Todd from Augusta, Georgia. How are y'all doing?
Doing good, Todd. Thanks for calling. What have you got for Kevin Nash?
Kev, I just wanted to start off by saying, you know, I know you had kind of gotten a little bit of a bad rap before on the creative side and everything. I just wanted to let you know that I appreciate all your contributions as a wrestler and as creative, and that kind of rolls into a question, kind of topic of conversation. Looking at just kind of how the state of WWE is right now with you know, with the pay-per-view format and with the, you know, 12, 13, 14 pay-per-views a year, it seems like every pay-per-view there's both world titles being defended every single month, sometimes twice a month. You've got WrestleMania, and it seems like the CM Punk Jericho match is, you know, I guess maybe third on the card, and Daniel Bryan kind of maybe fourth. What would it take to get those matches to be the primary matches like they were back in the 90s? You know, what's it going to take with the rest of the pay-per-views throughout the year in your mind as far as getting it back to where people care about the WWE title? I mean, do they need to start alternating months with, you know, one world title being defended and the other guy being thrown into a tag match or doing something else? I mean, I guess I'm just trying to figure out what's it going to take to make next year's WrestleMania, you know, the WWE title be the big draw, be the reason that people are buying the pay-per-view, not a Rock, Cena, or a Triple H, Undertaker as the main focal point.
Thanks, Todd. Good question. Kevin, your thoughts on that, the value of the title?
You know, if I was in either one of those championship matches, any four of those guys, and they're all very talented, I would not want to follow either of those matches.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to follow Cena Rock, and I definitely wouldn't want to follow a Hell in a Cell. So that being said, it is what it is. It's WrestleMania, and it's just like, to me, it's worth the price for Cena. It's worth the price for Jericho and Phil, and I'm getting this and this and this and this and this. And I saw the girl from, like, Access Hollywood now joining Kelly Kelly or something. I saw that, like, thrown in, you know. And it's like, I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, they just keep layering. And it's just like, it's one of those deals, like, even if I was sitting at home, I would buy this. If you're going to buy one pay-per-view, you're going to buy WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
As far as making the belts mean something, I think that one of the things that was happening was that, you know, there's guys in this business that have been in the business for 3 years and have been a 9-time world champion.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's starting to work for me personally with CM Punk is that CM Punk comes out and he continues to hold that strap. And through hook or crook, no matter how bad he gets beat up, he seems to pull it out. And that, to me, makes that belt mean something.
I can't wait, Kevin, for somebody to have the patience, whether it's TNA or WWE, to have someone hold the title for 2 years. Because I think once you get past that 12-month mark, the story of the pay-per-view.
I absolutely agree. Bobby Roode, it's working. It's working.
Yep.
It works.
But it takes a year.
He holds down and kisses, when he bends over and kisses that belt,
yep,
after he pulls something off, you know that it's a work, but you buy the emotion of he held on to it again, he held on to it again, and that's the beauty of those. And it does. Like, who is gonna? And I pray it's Phil. You know, I hope it's Phil, and I hope it's Rude. I think both those guys can pull it off
because
they both can talk. They both are good enough sized guys where they can beat a giant. They can go against the lightweight guys. Both got great work skills. It's just like the mic skills are great. I mean, they got it. They have, and the people seem to gravitate towards Punk, and the people seem to have a disdain.
90 seconds.
You can ignore that, Kev. We only hear that.
Okay.
Yep.
So I thought it was a demon in my mind or something.
I shouldn't have said anything.
So, yeah, right? I go to a psychologist tomorrow. But for those that are listening, we just got a 90-second, Scandinavian lady said 90 seconds. I don't know what that meant.
60
but,
seconds.
She's doing it again. But anyway, I just think that that's the key. The key is to keep it on somebody and make it special. And like you said, I think a year is the minimum that it makes it work out.
Kevin, can you stick around for a while longer with us? Since we're the hour flew by, and that's the live window we have. But we can stay on and continue to take calls if you've got time.
Yeah, I can take a few more.
Okay, cool. So we're gonna end the. I'm not gonna accept any more phone calls. If you're on hold, we're gonna try to get to your call. I can't guarantee it. Also, I have a bunch of email questions, and I've gone through. I've highlighted a few that I definitely want to get to. But we'll see how time works out. But for those who are listening to us live, the live window will end very soon. But you can just listen to the show later on.
10 seconds.
So anyway, let's. Kevin. Before I forget and we get too late in the show, do you have anything you want to plug? You mentioned Twitter. How can people follow you on Twitter? And also mention anything else you got coming up.
Yeah, we got the party shenanigans Friday.
How do people get info on that? You know. Or what should they Google?
I guess it's Kevin Nash's. What are they calling that damn thing? Check with Dave Hero. Dave Hero's got all the information. You can go on his Twitter page. I'll run something tonight on my Twitter page. I'll put all the information on my Twitter page, Real Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
So I'll do all that because I'm one of those people. I've got so many things going on. If I don't have it in front of me, I've got to have a cheat sheet for everything.
All right, that wraps it up for part one of the best of the PW Torch livecast. Interview with Kevin Nash. This interview went twice as long as what you just heard. This was a two-hour interview. That is the first hour. You can hear the second hour when you go VIP. Go to pwtorch.com/goVIP. And within 2 minutes, maybe 1 minute, you're signed up. You're in. You are a VIP member, and you gain access to an unbelievable library of pro wrestling podcasts, newsletters, and articles from our nearly three-decade history, plus new content every single day. That is exclusive to VIP members. Audio, articles, new newsletters, new back issues, and so much more. Check out full details at pwtorch.com/goVIP. And don't forget, when you're shopping this holiday season, shop at Amazon, but start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. Whatever gifts you don't get for Christmas, whatever gifts you think you deserve, you can get them yourself at Amazon right after the holidays with those gift cards. And be sure to start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thanks, everybody, for joining me on this special Best of PW Torch Livecast edition of the PW Torch Livecast. Tomorrow, Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryant take over on Prime Time Friday with a all-new live edition discussing the week in wrestling and maybe the year in wrestling and the week ahead. That's at pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream it or access it on demand at pwtorchlivecast.com. Thanks, everybody. Until next time, if you're a VIP member, I'll talk to you tonight on the Wade Keller Hotline or the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. But if you're not a VIP member, next time I'll be on the air is Monday after Raw. So everybody have a great holiday weekend. Merry Christmas. And until next time, Wade Keller signing off.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables with the one-hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly.
and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. Live!